Colonel Draffenreel too. Did the course at Sogor include any tactical training, tactical
Hardly
skills?
any. There was what they call a tactical officer there, or that isn't the right term, but and he used to give lectures. And as far as I remember, I don't remember this very carefully. We must have done an exercise outside once or twice, but nothing that stuck in my memory very much. It
I see.
was mostly paper or lectures.
There was a lot of focus in the training on the attention to the horse, wasn't there? Its
Yes,
care.
everything like that. Veterinary exam, shoeing, all that sort of thing. There were lectures on and exams on.
Yes. Now, in 1923, you went to Sealco.
Yeah, in the north.
And I think it was here you got involved in a rather larger scale of training than you had.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, as I say, Bangalore wasn't considered an Indian station, really, because it was right out of India, really, right down the south. Up in the north, all the troops were more concentrated in that area. And so every year, apart from what you did in your own station, there was a brigade at Sealkote, three regiments, one British regiment and two Indian cavalry regiments, apart from a brigade of infantry. And so there were, every year we were there, there were big maneuvers, which probably occupied, took place in September and occupied the best part of a month or 6 weeks, when you moved about in a very large area, really.
What scale of force was involved in these exercises?
Well, it was a force of, if I looked it up, I could tell you, but I mean, it would have perhaps one cavalry brigade or two cavalry brigades on one side, and one on the other, or two, vice versa. And probably a division or two divisions of infantry and armored cars. And I suppose the tank corps, which there must have been because they were in France, weren't they? I can't remember whether there were any tanks in India at that time.
No, there were a few armored car units.
Yes, I don't think there were any tank regiments or
Yes.
armored cars, I remember.
In these very large-scale exercises, do you recall what roles in any of the exercises were given to the bays? What kind of tasks in the exercise you had to carry out?
Well, mostly in the form of some reconnaissance of some sort. We were earmarked to go over some river and find out whether there was any enemy in such and such a place and that sort of thing. Mostly that sort of work. No sort of charging or anything like that, as far as I remember.
Yes, what about sort of dismounted fire and things like that?
Well, occasionally that came into it. Occasionally, I think.
Good. Well, your 6-year stay in
Yes,
India
in India.
came to an end in 1927, and you returned to Colchester.
Yeah.
But not for long, because you were very quickly posted to Woolwich. And I'm very interested indeed to learn as much as I can about the circumstances of the training course you did at Woolwich. How did you come to learn about the vacancy on the course?
This was me only, it was nothing to do with the regiment, it was me only that went to Woolwich. Only because at that particular time I wasn't actually adjutant of the regiment, but I was acting adjutant. And in the regimental office, a vacancy was offered to the bays. There may have been, I don't think there was one, I'm not sure about whether any other regiment was offered a vacancy, but anyhow, the bays were offered a vacancy.
Why?
Well, because the thought of mechanisation was in the minds of the high ups, I suppose. And eventually, all cavalry officers, they didn't all have to go to Woolwich, but a lot of them went to Bovington and that place. And I, as I think I told you, money was always at the back of my mind. And Woolwich was a very cheap place to live. And I found the bays in England were more expensive than I thought they would be. Mm. So I went there for a year.
What information was provided about what the course involved before you went there, when you first
nothing,
learned about it?
Nothing. Nothing.
Did you have any idea what you were letting yourself?
No. I'm afraid I didn't. Otherwise I might not have gone.
Did you take any steps to find out?
I don't think I did, no.
Could you have? I don't know how good communications were.
Well, I think, you see, we're rather a tight-knit little band, cavalry officers. And nobody had been on this course, or I think a similar one, from the cavalry at that particular time. So I wouldn't have got much information from anybody. I mean, they wouldn't have, if I'd gone to Woolwich, well, I wouldn't have taken the trouble to go to Woolwich. I wouldn't have been told anything if I had gone, I don't suppose.
Were there any other reasons why you were interested in going on the course than money?
None at all.
Well, how did you come to secure the place once you decided to try?
How did I get there?
Yes, how did you get permission to do it? What did you do about it?
Oh, well, when when a course comes up, you're either detailed by a commanding officer, like if you go on a signal course or the more usual ones, you're detailed in orders to go. But as I was sitting in the same office as the colonel, I just said to him, I would like to go on this course. And so he put my name in the way, and it was accepted.
What was his attitude to this course, your colonel?
Oh, I mean, he was quite agreeable to it. He said that he was in a chap who'd been through the whole of the First War and was of some age, so perhaps he saw mechanisation coming eventually, and he thought perhaps it was a good thing.
Had the place been widely publicised within the regiment?
No.
Did anyone know about it except you and the colonel?
No.
So there was no attempt to try and find out who was best qualified?
No, nothing like that.
Mm-hmm. On a more general level, was cavalry mechanisation, was the mechanisation of the cavalry at this time in 1927 a live issue?
I don't think it was really. I mean, to be absolutely truthful, you better not publish this. I didn't put myself to go into this because I had a thought that mechanisation would eventually come. My primary thought was that here's a place where I know they only pay a shilling a day for messing, and that'll suit me for a time. Mm-hmm. Had I known later on what it would involve, I wouldn't have gone.
But the course apart for the moment, and just thinking of mechanisation generally, was the likelihood of mechanisation for the cavalry at this time in 1927 a live issue?
Not for us, I don't think. I mean, it was, I think, the 11th Hussars and the 12th Lancers were actually just about being mechanised or possibly had been.
28.
Mm. And this was when, did I say?
27.
Well, close enough. Mm?
when I said a live issue, I really meant, was it something which was expected sooner or later by this time in 27?
Well, I'm sure by the more senior officers, but I don't know that the young ones, I mean, 27, I was 27 or 28, I don't think I put in a lot of the officers in the regiment were a good deal younger. I don't think we thought much about being mechanized at that particular time.
It wasn't talked about?
No. As far as I remember.
Yes.
I can't say categorically whether it was, but I...
Well, if it wasn't talked about, then you wouldn't have had any particular attitudes to it, would you,
no,
at that time?
No.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, out of the frying pan into the fire. Tell me a bit about Woolwich. Could you start off by giving me some insight into what the course involved?
Well, as far as I was concerned, not that I had any great insight of what it was going to be like until I got there, but when I did get there, it was much more theoretical than I expected. I hoped that I'd be, even for my own benefit, be taught more about how I could look after and maintain my own motor car. But that hardly came into it at all. It was 80% sitting around the table doing what I thought was very high mathematics, etc., etc. Things that I hadn't been able to do at school, let alone at Woolwich. 10 years later. So that part of it passed over my rather inadequate brain. Mm. But it went on the whole course.
Was there anything about the course that you liked? Enjoyed?
I can only say that here, I liked the freedom I got. Because there was no work, real what I call soldiering work, and so I could go away and, in fact, I played polo in London at that particular period. It was very convenient, and the head general at Woolwich lent me his polo ponies, and I used to go away every weekend.
That's very
girlfriend.
Friendly of him, wasn't it?
Wasn't it nice of him? Harding knew when he was such a charming chap. He said, I can never get up to London. I was lucky enough to...
Is that Rupert Harding Newman?
Well, I mean, he was a chap of 50 then.
Oh, this man, I think it's his son that I
must
have
heard.
Might be. Mm. Brigadier Rupert Harding Newman.
Yes, this fellow was he was a... head of Woolwich at that particular time.
These visits to London and playing polo, this was possible because the coursework didn't take up too much time?
Not much in the afternoon, you see. Mm-hmm. I think it was supposed to mug up.
Yes. What kinds of other officers were on the course with you? From what regiments?
Well, there were only 10 of us. There were classes, you see, and in our class I think there were either 9 or 10, and there were 4 Royal Tank Corps people, 2 gunners, that's 6, an ASC chap, 7, and 2 sappers, and me. That's roughly the break-up.
How did these others seem to compare with yourself in terms of their ability to assimilate the coursework?
I wasn't in the same street. I mean, they were all very experienced people. They knew all the answers before they went there, really, I would say, or most of them did. And I didn't know a single one before I went there or when I left.
Were there exams at the end of the
year? Oh, yes, indeed.
Did you pass them?
Well, I think I told him my report was that this officer could never be recommended for any mechanical post. That was my report.
Were you given a pass?
I was given a pass only chiefly because the head of our little department was a very nice chap, and I said, after I'd been there about a month or even less, I forget, I said, this is absolutely beyond me. I ought to be returned to my regiment. And he said, well, no, don't, for God's sake, do that, because you're the first cavalry officer we've had on this particular course, and it would be a bad... a bad thing for the rest of the cavalry if you had to be sent back or went home. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, as long as you give me a reasonable report, I'll stay.
I see.
So I think he gave me a low pass or whatever it was.
Did you find anything of value in the course for yourself?
I can't say I did, as far as I can remember now. It was above my head. I can remember the final exam. I don't think I could answer a single question. It was. I might have done something in the slightly more practical side, but in the theoretical side, the advanced, well, it was very high mathematics,
indeed,
in my opinion. You see.
Yes, so it was sort of degree level course.
Well, I should think so. I mean, logarithms and all that sort of thing. I hadn't even done them at school.
Did you find it a Did you find it a salutary lesson about volunteering?
Maybe. I didn't get kicked out enough.
You returned to your regiment in 1929, which by that time was at Tidworth.
That's right, yes.
After your absence on the advanced course for this 12-month period, how were you received when you returned to the regiment? Did they all expect you to be an expert engineer then?
Well, I think they did. But as this book says, as you read out yourself, instead of being... we had some mechanical vehicles then. This was, it shows the versatility expected of officers. Major Evelyn Fanshawe, on his return from the equitation course, that's the cavalry school in Weedon, on his return from the equitation course of Whedon and the duties of equitation, was assumed by Colonel Draffen, who had just completed the mechanical course. So I was made the equitation officer.
So you came back from Woolwich and you were given this job as, what was it called?
Equitation officer. That's the, in the riding school, you see. Responsible for the training of all recruits in riding. Not in mechanisation.
And the regiment's former equitation officer, what job did he get?
Well, I can't remember whether... I suppose it was...
This period of Tidworth from 29 to 32, when you came into quite close contact with the tank corps in exercises and the like, did your regiment make any attempt at any time to use such knowledge as you had acquired at Woolwich in a relevant kind of way?
I don't think so. No. We were ably assisted at that period by the Royal Tank Corps officers, who I think I'm right in saying were at Perham Down, which was just above Tidworth, if you know. You've probably been there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, I think some of them, we were very friendly with them. Some of them came and lived with us, and some of our chaps went and lived with them.
Did they?
Mm.
Your regimental history describes the period 1929 to 32 as 3 years of intensive activity on Salisbury Plain. Did you find it 3 years of intensive activity?
Well, I think that term was probably used because although we personally were very friendly with the Royal Tank Regiment, I think some of the more senior officers, not of regimental standard, of higher up than that, were anxious to show off their cavalry regiments as being more superior than tank corps regiments.
How did they go about trying to achieve that?
Well, there were at that time, of course, manoeuvres going on, and they generally at that time, as far as I remember, there was a cavalry brigade at Tidworth, three regiments. They were pitched against the Royal Tank regiments, and so there was a certain amount of feeling if one brigade could beat the other, or assumed that they had beaten them. That, I think, was what was the back of their minds.
Well, how did that work out? Tell me a bit more about these exercises, how they were organised, and
your memories of
them.
You've never been a soldier?
No, I was in the Air Force for a short period.
Well, every year at Tidworth, Salisbury Plain was a great training place in England for any large organisation of manoeuvres, and so it always took place round Salisbury Plain, and whatever forces were organised, to begin with initially, cavalry regiments were always put on one side and Royal Tank regiments were put on the other. Whether one can say definitely that one side won or got beaten, it would be a cleverer man than me to say.
What kind of impressions did you get about the balance of power?
Well, very little, because the cavalry regiments, I'm really talking now of when they were in the initial stages of mechanization, and a lot of their horses were already gone. But likewise, they hadn't had many replacements of any mechanical vehicles other than lorries, which were represented, you stuck a flag in there.
I'm sorry, I'm getting a bit confused. I assumed that during this period you were operating still as horsed units.
Up till...
I mean, it wasn't until 36 that the regiment was mechanised.
Yes.
We were talking about 29, 32, these exercises at Salisbury Plain.
Well, we were still cavalry, we were still horsed then.
Yes. And what I'm interested in is how, from your personal point of view, this endeavour to match armoured forces against horse forces, what kind of things emerged from it as far as your personal experiences were concerned?
Well, of course, it was out of my province, really, being only a fairly junior captain. I suppose the high-ups, the brigadiers and the generals, got value from it and would have understood what had really taken place. But we smaller fry didn't know and didn't care, I don't think.
I was thinking, for example, about such things as how in the exercise is the relative mobility of tanks on the one hand and horses seem to compare.
I can't really say. All I can remember is that we once had to get onto Salisbury Plain before the before any other troops got on. We were pushed right out, you know. You started miles apart, and then the main battle always took place somewhere on Salisbury Plain, because it was the only place that was suitable, really. The only incident I can ever remember is that we were supposed to get to some place before the opposing side. My colonel started us off before we were supposed to start, and we galloped from the town that we left our night bivouac and got onto the plane. And once we were on, then we were fairly, fairly happy. But I think that was a slight cheat, really.
I remember talking to one tank corps officer about these exercises, and he complained bitterly that in the operations against the cavalry officers' wives were going around in motor cars, collecting information about their dispositions, and then going back and telling their husbands.
Well, that's, I think he's probably absolutely right. And I remember it was a false picture, of course, really. We used to have somebody who wasn't, somebody in the regiment who wasn't actually connected with the exercise taking place, taking half a dozen horses with sacks, pulling sacks, and making them gallop up a road where there was a lot of dust to create a dust storm to make the other side think there was something big taking place there. But as I say, it was a false picture.
That sounds
it was a
like
joke, a lot of it.
That sounds like valid diversionary tactics.
Yes, yes, that was it.
This period did enable you to come into contact with members of the tank corps quite a lot. Did you find that they had any different attitudes in their soldiering to cavalry officers?
Well, I wouldn't like to say anything about that. I mean, you're going to put this down.
Well, the machine's on.
No, well, then I won't speak.
Tank Corps officers I've spoken to, for example, have said that they felt that in their training and in their methods and in their approaches that they were a great deal more professional than the cavalry soldiers. And, you know, I mean, that's not rude, that's just a sort of an observation, a critical observation.
I think that's absolutely true. I wouldn't disagree with that at all. But if you switch that thing off.
During this period of exercises, were there any occasions on which cavalry and tank corps were integrated as opposed to being on opposite sides?
I should say no.
No.
But okay. I won't swear to that.
Right.
I mean, there were some towards the just before the war when they had very large manoeuvres on soldier plane, and I quite imagine, not that I can remember it, because I wasn't there then, that there were probably some tank regiments on the same side as the cavalry. Mm.
Well, is there anything that interested you or which sticks in your mind pertaining to that period which you think is interesting or important that you'd like to tell me? I seem to be asking all the wrong questions.
No. I think the thing that stuck in our minds at that particular period, more than anything else, was, although we were in the process of being becoming a mechanized regiment and being eventually going to be equipped with tanks, that none of the tanks existed for us. All we had was a lorry with a flag in, which was supposed to represent a squadron of tanks or something.